I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's Radio Boston, and it's Friday, so that means time for the Week in Review, and we'll start with that runaway MBTA red line train from yesterday. Here's Governor Charlie Baker in a press conference just this afternoon.
My message today to the millions of people who rely on the MBTA to get around every day is that we are confident that this was an isolated incident where a single individual appears to have made multiple errors.
That individual is likely the train operator. The latest reports are that he may have used a cord to tie off the throttle and failed to set a brake before he exited the red line engine to deal with a signal problem. Now, yesterday on our show, we heard from Carl Berkowitz, an engineer specializing in transportation safety, and he explained that it's the operator's job to make sure the train is secure at all times.
If the train operator had to do something to handle a signal, platform signal, his obligation was to shut the train off, lock the door, then proceed to open the door onto the platform. But every step of the way is a safeguard. And it appears from just what happened that these safeguards weren't followed.
And again, today, Secretary of Transportation Stephanie Pollack would not confirm details surrounding the throttle, but she did say this.
There are specific actions by operators that are categorized as prohibited acts. And undertaking such a prohibited act makes an employee subject to termination.
Well, joining us now in the studio to talk about this and the rest of the week's news is Renee Graham, columnist for the Boston Globe. Renee, great to see you.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Also with us is Arlene Isaacson, political consultant and co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. She's president of Isaacson Political Consultants. Arlene, great to have you as well.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me just get your first hit from both of you on the red runaway red line train and what we seem to know now, that it may have been multiple operator errors that led to what happened yesterday. Renee, let's start with you.
I found it remarkable that the governor said he's confident that this was something that happened with one operator one time. Does anybody else feel that way? I'm a regular T rider, and I find it hard to believe that this was a one-off, that he's the only conductor who's done this, and it was the first time he'd ever done it. You know, I think the thing the MBTA needs to keep clear is that, you know, you have all your little shortcuts and you do these little things, but, you know, people's lives are in your hands, are in their hands. And, you know, I think the attitude like, oh, no, this was a one-off, don't worry about it, I think it is something to worry about. And I'd like to think that the T is looking at it more seriously than the feeling I got watching that press conference.
Right, and especially if these shortcuts are ones that bypass safety systems.
Exactly.
On a train. Arlene, your thoughts?
Well, I remember a number of people, when they first heard the story, immediately wondered if it might be an act of terrorism, which the administration made clear they believed it was not yesterday. But I do suspect that given the recent concerns about terrorism in our state, California, Paris, that this incident will lead to changes in both technology and security so that this kind of problem can never actually be employed as a terrorist tool going forward.
Right. It's one of those things where it gives us a glimpse into what could happen in more extreme cases. So maybe we'll see that being used for further preparedness in the future. But can we get back to a second to what Renee said? Because I have to say, I wondered exactly the same thing. I mean, like, I presume, you know, but just like in any workplace, people talk with each other, they share trade secrets or, you know, or whatever, or there's, you know, cultures of a workplace. You know, maybe he didn't talk about these things. I don't know, but it's hard to imagine that he walked on a train with some, if this is indeed what happened, with some kind of strap or cord or something, and that it had never happened before at any other time.
And how did they determine that in 24 hours, that this had never happened before and people don't do this and he was the only person who did this? They seem so confident, and I just don't see how they can be. It's not reassuring to me. Yeah. That they know this for a fact.
Okay. Well, let's play another little piece of tape here, because Stephanie Pollack did go out of her way to say that there is a bit of a silver lining here, because while there were multiple errors made by somebody on that red line train, again, they would not confirm what has been reported. She did say that the rest of the actions by the MBTA that brought that train to a halt after it went through four stations were a sign of that part of the system working.
If we think about what the dispatcher and the MBTA employees at the Operations Control Center did, they responded exactly the way that they needed to respond, and they took control of the situation very quickly. And as far as we have determined to date, they executed what they needed to execute perfectly.
Arlene, does that give you any sense of positivity or optimism in, about the MBTA?
Well, hope springs eternal. I actually was thinking about what happened yesterday in the context of the Google's driverless cars. And I was kind of wondering if what happened yesterday, if what's going on with Google's development of driverless cars might end up informing how trains handle these matters going forward, or actually if it could be the inverse, if the problems we saw yesterday might inform the reception and the acceptance of driverless cars.
Yeah, interesting. You know, in fact, London sometime soon is going to get driverless trains on the London Underground, and that's happening there, although the drivers' union or organization there says they claim it's a disaster waiting to happen. But we'll see. Technology will march us forward. Let's turn now to Donald J. Trump, because he definitely made headlines all over the world this week, this time for an announcement he made on Monday in South Carolina. Here it is.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on.
Renee, you want to go first?
You know, earlier that day, it was announced that Ted Cruz was leading in Iowa. And I remember just briefly thinking, okay, Donald Trump's going to do something to get attention. Wow, did he get attention? You know, everything, nobody was talking about Ted Cruz's lead. Everybody led with it. Everyone knew that was going to be the story for the rest of the week. You know, this is what Donald Trump does. He throws grenades and he gets people fired up in the worst imaginable ways. He appeals to the worst instincts in everyone. And you heard it. He announced it and he gets a big, you know, this big cheer. I don't even know. I mean, it's astonishing to me that we're still talking about Donald Trump in December. And we have to even have a discussion about a presidential candidate calling for the banishment of Muslims from the United States.
Well, we're talking about him in part because he's leading in the polls
and
still.
He's
solidifying his lead.
He is. Nothing he says at this point can hurt him. Hmm. You know, I expect him to get another bump because he said this. It's remarkable, but terrifying too.
Arlene, let me ask you. I'm wondering if this is the point at which the GOP or parts of the GOP start pushing back against Donald Trump, because we did hear some of that this week in the wake of his quote-unquote announcement.
Well, it's a good question, although it seems to me that he's managed to bully most of the Republican Party in a way that is really rather shocking. I mean, the phenomenon is that demagoguery is dangerous, and there isn't a Jew who survived the Holocaust who doesn't understand that. You know, bluster, bombast, they can be very entertaining, they can be cathartic, but they're not good. They don't constitute good leadership. And it's easy to cater to people's fears, to make it sound like solutions are simple, that all it matters is being strong. But when you cater, you know, it's sort of catering to our desire, our collective desire to not have to think through the real world ramifications of proposed solutions. But the fact is, we don't elect a president to keep it simple. You elect a president to get it right, even if it's not as simple as we'd like it to be. Mm.
Well, so let's hear from some other parts of the GOP. Let's first turn to Governor Baker, of course, here in Massachusetts, and here's what he said.
I have no idea what the motivation is on that, but first of all, it's unrealistic. Secondly, it's inappropriate. And third, it doesn't make any sense.
And in fact, Governor Baker went on to react even more strongly than that as he read the full statement from Trump that Trump put out on Monday. In Washington, House Speaker Paul Ryan said this about Donald Trump's proposal.
This is not conservatism. What was proposed yesterday is not what this party stands for. And more importantly, it's not what this country stands for.
So, Renee, let me turn to you. Do you think that that's a muscular enough response from the GOP?
I think it's nonsense. I think this is exactly what the GOP stands for. But what the GOP is reacting to is the fact that Donald Trump has gone so far to the right that their concern is that they can't possibly win in 2016, that he's going to alienate moderate Republicans, independents, all of that. So, you know, this idea that, oh, my God, it's so extreme and I can't believe he said this, you know, Donald Trump is the monster that the GOP has created. All the Tea Party, you know, noodling, all the things that have gone on the last 8 years, This is the end result. It's Donald Trump sitting here and saying on television, I want to ban Muslims from entering the U.S. So the GOP isn't reacting to Donald Trump. Their fear is that they're going to blow it in 2016 because he might end up being the nominee. Mm.
Well, let's start to talk about a little bit on what's happening on the ground in New Hampshire, because the latest polling there still puts Trump in the lead amongst Republican voters here. Donald Trump was in Portsmouth last night, where he was accepting the endorsement of the New England Police Benevolent Association. And upon accepting that endorsement, he promised the crowd there that if elected president, he would sign an executive order if and when he gets into office that would do this.
That anybody killing a policeman, policewoman, police officer, anybody killing a police officer, death penalty. It's going to happen. OK, can't go. We can't let this go. We can't let this
now, WBUR asked Jerry Flynn, who's the executive director of the New England Police Benevolent Association, why the group endorsed Trump. Here's Jerry Flynn's explanation.
And we invited every candidate to come to our forum. Every candidate. Donald Trump was the only one who showed up. What he said tonight, he will sign the executive order on his first day in office for the death penalty for the killing of a police officer or a correction officer in the line of duty. That speaks volumes, and that's what members wanted to hear.
Arlene, let me turn to you on this, because, okay, so that's Jerry Flynn's explanation of what earned the endorsement. Trump talks a hard line, absolutely. But I have to say, it made me a little uncomfortable, or my eyebrows were raised, to see him standing in front of a group of law enforcement officers who are charged with protecting and serving all residents of the United States. And Donald Trump is a man who, you know, who's called many of those residents criminals. I mean, he said that about Mexicans and immigrants, et cetera, et cetera. So
no,
exactly the juxtaposition,
right.
it's confounding. Let's put it that way.
That's generous to say it's confounding. The you know, there's a famous adage that goes something like that you campaign in poetry and you govern in prose. I don't know if it was Ben Franklin or Mario Cuomo who said it. Trump seems to believe his own rhetoric of oversimplified solutions, most of which cater to people's fears. He's almost the inverse of Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln, you know, extolled people to listen to their better angels, and Trump seems to want them to always listen to their worser angels, if you will. Renee made a very good point of the way in which he distracts from Cruz moving forward by doing his bombast skit. And it's almost like he speaks – the thing that the Republicans have to worry about is that he is speaking the things that dare not speak its name, so to speak. You know, he says the things that they think but they usually use code words for, and he's putting it right out there in a way that makes it harder for them to avoid.
Well, there are no dog whistles with Donald Trump. It's all out there. I just have to ask, can you call your association benevolent if you're endorsing Donald Trump? Just asking. You know, I wasn't totally surprised by the endorsement, but I found it very disheartening.
Mm. Well,
if the reason they did it is because he's the only one who showed up, that's about as low a bar as you could ever possibly use.
Exactly.
Well, this is amazing. Well, and also maybe that is true, but that amazes me, because in New Hampshire, the candidates, bar Donald Trump, are there all the time. Some of them are like basically moved to New Hampshire, and so the fact that no one else showed up, I wonder about that. All right. Well, we just got a couple minutes left, but I do want to touch on a major case at the Supreme Court. Heard this week, oral arguments in Fisher versus the University of Texas yet again. This is the second time the case has shown up at the court. Abigail Fisher, plaintiff in the case, claims that she was unfairly denied admission at UT Austin based on the fact that she is white. And during oral arguments, Justice Antonin Scalia raised some eyebrows with this.
There are those who contend that it does not benefit African Americans to get them into the University of Texas, where they do not do well, as opposed to having them go to a less advanced school, a slower track school, where they do well.
So lots of legal experts have told me over time that, in a sense, oral argument is just theater, and it may not necessarily give us much information on how the justices are going to vote. But nevertheless, that's what Justice Scalia said. Renee, your thoughts?
Well, if that's theater, Scalia's a bad actor. Let's make it clear.
Yeah.
Boy, he really brought his Scalia that day, didn't he? He was really getting his Scalia on. You know, this is what Scalia does. You know, it's all out there. You know, he's almost Donald Trump-like in his own kind of way, saying this thing that other people say, well, you know, if you can't get into those schools, maybe you should go to slower schools where you'll do better. How profoundly offensive was that statement? How do you have a Supreme Court justice say about a group of students that, well, if you can't handle it, go somewhere else, and make it so exclusively black? You know, look, they've been trying to dismantle affirmative action for 50 years. You know, it's not surprising. It may happen this time if the Supreme Court decides that Abigail Fisher is correct and they decide in her favor. Yeah, it's going to be a lot harder and it's going to start to tumble. But I think what everyone keeps forgetting is without affirmative action, you wouldn't have the small gains you have now. It's not a matter of necessarily racial preferences. It's like if you don't have it in place, you're not going to have people of color. You're not going to have women. They just won't get hired. They'll never get in the door. Now, just really quickly say, it's not that people of color and women love affirmative action because it brands you, because suddenly people think that's the only reason you're there. Mm. But the idea that somehow this was terribly unfair to Abigail Fisher and that they're willing to see this case again, I just find the whole thing really deeply offensive.
Arlene?
You know, many successful women today are beneficiaries of affirmative action without necessarily even knowing it, because it wasn't legally based affirmative action. It was cultural affirmative action. When I was young, people assumed that a woman couldn't, shouldn't be a doctor, lawyer, CEO. They assumed we'd be inferior at all of those jobs. Now, thankfully, some employers felt they had to add women to the workforce because of that cultural affirmative action sense. And that caused millions of women to gain access to colleges and professions previously closed to them. And that has changed the world forever for the better.
Well, we have just enough time for very, very brief hubbubs today. That's the story that didn't really make it above the fold, as you might say. So, Arlene, let me start with you and your hubbub.
Well, mine would be about the spirit of the season as people reflect on the importance of compassion. Former Speaker, House Speaker Sal DeMasing is rotting away right now in a prison in the South as he struggles with cancer. His medical treatments have been at best substandard, and his family can rarely see him because he's so far away. When he was Speaker, he helped millions of people. We wouldn't have marriage equality without him, or strong environmental laws, or health care for all. He is the perfect candidate for a compassionate release from prison so he can receive the appropriate medical care and be with his loved ones in his waning days. Yesterday, Mayor Walsh weighed in saying precisely this. Now we need the President and Attorney General Loretta Lynch to tell the Federal Bureau of Prisons to grant Sal this dying wish for a compassionate release.
That's a sobering and thoughtful hubbub, Arlene. Thank you. Renee, your hubbub?
Mine's got a little publicity yesterday, but it's also really personal. It was announced yesterday that the Boston Globe is going to be moving from its location on Morrissey Boulevard, where it's been since 1958, downtown to State Street. I worked full-time for the Globe for 18 years, and it feels like my childhood home. And I felt a little misty and a little sad to think that they're going to be moving out of there. I always thought of it as high school with better cars. I'm happy that, you know, they're moving to a better location. They're going to be in the center of the city where they always should have been. But, you know, there's a lot of things I'm going to miss about that building.
Yeah.
But not the mice. Never, ever the mice.
It does feel like it's going to be hard to imagine that stretch of Morrissey Boulevard without the Globe there.
I mean,
like,
that whole stretch of Morrissey Boulevard was the Globe for me. So, it's a sad time, but I'm happy for them.
All right. So my hubbub, my hubbub is the Chipotle norovirus outbreak at Cleveland Circle. Near BC. Now it's 140 or so BC college students who are suffering from gastrointestinal distress. Now, norovirus is a serious problem. I think it's the major cause of food poisoning in the United States. And we had a guest on who said this might have happened because food service workers don't actually get a lot of sick days. It's, you know, they lose pay if they don't show up, so they're disincentivized to take a day home to get better. But conspiracy theorists on my staff, I'm looking at you, Jamie, the director, also wonder whether or not some of these illnesses at BC might be students trying to avoid finals. Not fair. Norovirus sucks, Jamie. It's horrible. But it stopped me from doing my part to prop up Chipotle's share price since I don't go anymore. So that's my hubbub. Renee Graham, op-ed contributor for the Boston Globe. Always great to have you, Renee. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
And Arlene Isaacson, political consultant and co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Arlene, great to talk to you.
Same here.
Have a great weekend, both
of you.
Thank you. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. There's more of the show in just a minute. This is Radio Boston.